This is Writers' Voices. Ordinarily, Monica Hadley would be here with her mother hosting Writers' Voices, but today this is Cheryl Fusco Johnson, pitch hitting for Monica and Carolyn. And with me today, I'm very pleased to welcome Rebecca Yanni.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'm happy to be here.
We met not too long ago, sometime this year, and it's been quite a year for Rebecca. And would you tell us a little bit about what your writing life has been like this year?
Yes, I love to. This year, well, I've always written. I've always loved to write. But this year, my first book made it out on shelves in February. The book, Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse, debuted with Dutton Children's Books. And for me, it's a dream come true.
And there's more to that dream, right? So what other successes have you had with your writing this year?
Yes, there are two other books under contract, the sequel to Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse, called Every Cowgirl Needs Dancin' Boots, comes out in June of this year. And actually, there is a third cowgirl book in the works as well. But another book unrelated to the cowgirl series, called Jammy Dance, comes out in January 2012 with FSG. And I should mention the illustrators, too, of these books. The Every Cowgirl books are illustrated by Lynn Averill, a very gifted illustrator and a cowgirl at heart and in real life. And the Jammy Dance book is illustrated by Tracy Dockray, who also does the newer Beverly Cleary books, the Ramona books.
And if we could show you these pictures, the illustrations on all of Rebecca's books are fabulous. But this would sound like a great dream come true for all aspiring children's writers that you have four books coming out in 2 years. Actually, I think Jammy Dance is in 2012,
mm-hmm,
is that right?
Yes.
And the sequel to this book comes out in June of 2011.
Yes.
Right, so you've got a lot of books coming out, and it looks like an instantaneous success to people who don't know you, but I know a lot of work has gone into this journey. So how would you say this journey started for you? When did you first know you wanted to write for publication?
When I was six, maybe? No, but I've always loved to read. I've always loved to write. I do remember sitting on the bus at probably age six or seven and telling the neighbor girl that I was working on a novel, and that was a secret, don't tell anyone. I don't know whatever became of that novel. I have yet to finish a novel, though I'd love to someday. But I have always loved stories. And I think it was a love of story that sent me to college, majoring in English and French. And then teaching high school English. Through it all, I wrote. When my children were born, my leave of absence turned to a move from Massachusetts to Iowa, and my writing turned to my children, and I wrote because I was seeing the world through their eyes, and writing sometimes for them also.
And so how many children do you have, and how old are they?
Well, we have four now. We have, I have a 10-year-old son, Andrew, a daughter, Anna, who just turned nine. I have a 5-year-old son named Jacob, and a newly adopted 3-year-old son named Joshua.
And what was the first thing that you wrote? So I'm assuming when you were writing at first about your children, you were journaling?
I do. I've always done a lot of journaling. I've written some poetry, short stories. I have a few novels, as I mentioned, that I've started. But when my children came along, I did. I don't think I even realized I was writing picture book manuscripts. At first, I was just writing sort of slice of life stories about them and for them.
And how did you go from writing for yourself and writing for your children to thinking about having a wider audience?
Well, I met another local author, Beth Tubbs, and she was very plugged in to some Des Moines area writers groups, actually the Des Moines area writers group, DOG, which meets every second Thursday at the Urbandale Public Library.
And would you explain the genesis of the name DOG?
I don't know the genesis of it, except that it's D-A-W-G, Des Moines Area Writers Group. I don't know who came up with it. That's actually a good question.
Well, the fact that it's an acronym.
Yes. Oh, yes, it is. Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, so you met these writers, and did you begin then showing them work for critiquing? Or
I did. I think I even brought work the first meeting that I went to. I brought Jammy Dance. And I had it tucked away in my bag. I wasn't sure if I would be brave enough to read it, but they were such a welcoming and friendly group that they coaxed me into pulling it out, and they were very receptive and encouraging, but they also had helpful tips.
And then what happened after that? Did you go home and revise?
I did. I went home and I did some revising. I also, one of their most helpful tips too was to look up SCBWI, another group called, actually short for the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. Cheryl, you know this group well.
I do know that group well. I was regional advisor for Iowa. That means I was the Iowa head of Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators for 5 years. That's been a while ago. But it's a nationwide group. It's open to any aspiring children writer. You don't have to be published to join. And the group in Iowa is very active. So it's great that you then, it sounds like, got hooked in with that group.
I did. And it's even an international group, isn't
it? It is international. Yes, that's true.
But yes, Iowa has a very active group, and I probably went to my first conference 5 years ago, and I love the SCBWI conferences because they give writers an opportunity to work on the craft of writing, but for me it was also a chance to explore the world of publishing. I knew nothing about submitting manuscripts or query letters or finding the right house or selecting an agent or submitting to an agent. All of that was brand new to me. And
so even though you had gotten, was it a master's in English literature?
Yes.
You had just never come across that kind of information before?
Well, right. I always, I studied literature. The writing that I did for an audience was really academic. The writing that I did for myself might have included the poetry, the short stories, the picture book manuscripts, but when I was writing professionally, I was writing academically and teaching high school English. I did get to teach creative writing. I loved teaching creative writing, but I also taught a lot of literature and composition and even grammar and vocabulary. So,
are you doing any teaching now?
I just finished a class at the Des Moines for Des Moines Community Education called Writing, now let's see if I can get the name of it right. I think it was called Writing Children's Literature from Teens to Tots.
So you were teaching other aspiring children's writers?
I was, yes. And I've done some adjunct teaching, some composition teaching, and small classes like that off and on.
This is, I just every so often want to remind our listeners, this is KRUU 100.1, Voice of Fairfield, Iowa. That's FM, Fairfield, Iowa and beyond. It's the first solar-powered radio station in the Midwest. And today, I'm Cheryl Fusco-Johnson as the host of Writers' Voices, and with me is Rebecca Yanni, who has a new picture book coming out. Be a great Christmas gift. And it's Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse. Now, would you tell us a little, so you've explained a little, you got in with this writers group, started going to conferences, learned a little bit about publishing and the how you would start to tackle that project. And then you had taken Jammy Dance to your critique group, and then you took it to a conference. Is that right?
I did. I did take it to a conference. But actually, that was the second contract, book contract that I received. So I wonder if I should back up and start with Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse.
Yeah, go
and
ahead.
Tell that story.
Yeah, and tell us a little how you wrote this book, too.
This book was inspired by my daughter, Anna. She was probably 5 when I first wrote the manuscript, and she had just learned how to ride her bike, and she could pedal pretty fast. And she came in from biking one day, and she had long braids in her hair and cowgirl boots on and a bandana around her neck. And she came in all hot and sweaty, and I patted her on the back and said, "How's my bicycle cowgirl?" And she giggled. And that just kept me thinking. This little image of a bicycle cowgirl wouldn't leave me. And I started thinking about similarities between bikes and horses, and were there any? And how was learning how to ride a bike like learning how to ride a horse? And I don't know very much about learning how to ride a horse, because really the only horseback riding I've done has been the kind where your horse follows the horse in front of him and off you go. But I had fun thinking about those comparisons, and I talked to some of my horsey friends, and we do quite a bit of biking as a family, so thought about it then, and this manuscript, Bicycle Cowgirl, came together.
And what was the next step?
Well, every writer also needs writing friends who say, "Hey, you should take this manuscript to the next conference and sign up for a critique." And so I decided to do that. I had had a couple of critiques before with visiting authors or editors, and I always found them very useful, though none of those meetings had led to contracts yet. I always felt like it was a valuable way to spend time and money to...
So our listeners may not be aware that when you go to these conferences that are sponsored by the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, you can pay a little bit extra and get a critique of one of your manuscripts. And the way this generally works is you turn the manuscript into the people running the conference, and they choose who they think would be the best person to read your manuscript and critique it for you. And you can put some suggestions. You'll know ahead of time who's coming to speak, and usually there's authors who are well known, and they'll usually be an editor or more, sometimes more than one editor, and they'll often be an agent. And you could pick which one of those speakers you want to have critique your work, but everybody wants to have the editors and agents, so there'll be a little bit of decision making on which manuscript is the most likely to result in a sale, and generally those are the manuscripts that the editors and agents see when they come. So that is the process where you submitted. So who ended up being the critiquer of your manuscript?
Well, I knew that Jane Yolen, children's author Jane Yolen, actually more than a children's author. I think she has 300 books that have been in print.
And Jane Yolen also is a former children's book editor. She had her own imprint for a number of years. So she, among the people who are familiar with children's book writing, she's a star in the universe.
Oh, she is. And my own children, our own family, loves her books. My children loved the dinosaur series, How Do Dinosaurs Say Goodnight, Eat Their Food. We still read those. And we love, of course, Caldecott Winter Owl Moon.
And how did you feel knowing that you were going to be taking your manuscript to Jane Yolen?
Well, at first, I just kind of on a whim or put her down as my first choice. But just because I wanted to meet her, I thought, oh, I would love to have 10 minutes of time to just talk with this amazing woman. But then when I found out, in fact, she was the one assigned to my manuscript, I almost felt sick. I was very, very nervous. I thought, I don't want her to read my manuscript. And the night before I went in for the critique, something really cool happened. My son came home from school. He was in second grade, And he said, Ma, and he knew that I was nervous and that I was going in for this critique with Jane the next day. And he said, Mom, look at this work we did in class today. And he handed me a worksheet on figurative language, sensory language.
In second grade.
I know. And I taught high school English. So I was looking at this sheet just thinking, you're brilliant. Your teacher's brilliant. You're learning about poetry and you're so young. And to me, that was just exciting. He was writing about the crunch of the snow and the wool of the scarf, the taste of the woolly scarf. And I can't remember. I wish I had the sheet in front of me, but all of this just rich sensory language. And I said, Andrew, this is wonderful. Thanks for sharing it. And he said, you don't even get it, Mom. He said, what book were we reading? And I looked a little bit more closely and I said, this is Jane Yolen's Owl Moon. And he said, yes. He said, this was the book that the whole class read today to learn about imagery and sensory language 20 years after it won the Caldecott. It was being used in this way in my son's classroom. And I just thought that was so neat.
Did he knew that you were going to be talking to her the next
day?
He
knew. And so he came home and he told me that. And I actually folded up the worksheet. And I thought, if I have a chance at the end of our critique, I want to share this with Jane Yolen. But I didn't want to share it with her until we were done because I wanted my money's worth of 10 minutes.
You know, to be sure terrible. She gave you your instructions.
Oh, no, I knew that she would. But I, as you know, I can get chatty. And I wanted to stay focused and to learn from someone that I knew could teach me a lot. And so with that paper folded in my pocket.
Little talisman.
Yes, I went the next day to this critique.
And it sounds like it went well.
It did. It did. Jane Yolen spoke that morning about revision, the importance of seeing again what you've written and not letting it be finished prematurely.
Now, you've been a writing teacher.
Yes.
And is that something that you have noticed that students are a little averse to revising?
Well, yes. I mean, I think sometimes we're all tempted to believe that we get it right the first time, whatever it is. We like to think that that it comes easily, to take shortcuts maybe. But revising is so important. And I think even putting something away for a little bit and returning to it and trying to see it with fresh eyes.
I think I was at this conference. Did she give out bookmarks that talked about revising?
She probably did. I don't remember the bookmarks, but I do remember learning so much about the revision process. And then I went in for this critique, and she said, I like this. She said, I like this a lot. She said, has a very strong voice. I think she called it sassy. And she thought that the main character was charming. But she thought it was missing a story. And that sounded devastating to me. I thought, wow, a story that's missing a story can't be a good thing. But she said, no, we've had this whole conference about revising. Take this home and revise it and submit it. I think you need to do that. And I guess to underline her seriousness, she was kind enough to give me the names of some editors. And she said, when you've revised it, and she said, do that first. But she said, then submit to one of these editors. And the first one on the list was Steve Meltzer at Dutton Children's Books.
And he turned out to be your
editor.
And
he turned out to be the editor. And in fact, that was such a neat thing because I had sent out some manuscripts before and I was accustomed to waiting, 6 months for a sometimes personal rejection letter, but a rejection letter nonetheless. And when I submitted this story after revising it to Steve Meltzer at Dutton Children's Books, I think his email came 2 weeks later, And
that's incredible.
He said that he had had lunch with Jane Yolen, and she told him that it was coming. And so I felt like that was such a gift to have someone so so talented and so special remember me in that way. In fact, the book is dedicated to my daughter who inspired the story, but it does have a thank you to Jane Yolen, because I think she was so instrumental in helping this book find a home.
Well, you had some responsibility here too, because when Jane Yolen said, "This is wonderful, but it lacks a story," it was your responsibility to understand what she meant and figure out how to give it a story. So what did you do? How did you do that?
Well, I think the original manuscript was more, like I said, it was inspired by Anna and sort of written for my children at first, and it was more of a slice of life.
A mood piece?
Perhaps. This Nellie Sue learning how to tame her filly, or how to ride her skittish new bicycle. And it was really less about taming the bike, and it was more about her learning how to ride the bicycle. But it needed more of a plot, more of a central conflict, more of the traditional structure, which of course I know a lot about from the reading that I've done and the teaching, but I needed that outside eye to kind of see it and point it out that, oh, you know, this needs to be more apparent in your story. So
did it take you very long to grasp how to give it more of a story, or did you feel like once you had that identified that you thought, oh yeah, that's right? And
it happened pretty quickly. It was kind of an aha moment for me, you know, like oh of course. Once I stepped away from the critique, and I felt so the meeting went very, very well. Jane Yolen also signed her book, Take Joy, for me later that day. And I had several books for her to sign. Most were for my children, but I had purchased Take Joy, which is written really for writers. And I had gotten it for myself, and I said, would you please sign this one to me? And she signed for Becky, because one day you will sign for me.
And you sent her a?
I did send her a signed copy of the book as soon as it came out. But I just thought that line was so inspiring to me. I felt so encouraged by that, and thought there is certainly power in words.
Well, it sounds like one of the greats, Jane Yolen, saw power in your words, and perhaps our listening audience would like to hear a little, so maybe you could find a passage you'd like to read to us. And while you're doing that, I just want to remind listeners that we're here at KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And today, this is Writers' Voices. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, pitch hitting for Monica Hadley and her mother, Carolyn. And our guest today is children's book author Rebecca Yanni, who has sold 4 picture books in quick succession, and she's going to read a little from her first one. And would you tell us what that is and read a little for us?
Okay, this is Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse, and I should mention too, illustrated by Lynn Averill. I'm a cowgirl from head to toe, and every cowgirl needs a horse. So I asked for one for my birthday. You can't see this, but the second page is a plan for Nellie Sue's birthday, drawn in wonderful kid art. She's moved the car out of the garage to make room for the horse. Birthday morning, I shook the sleep out of my braids and dressed for riding. I pulled up my jeans, snapped on my chaps, tugged on my boots, and tipped my hat. Morning, Nellie Sue, I said to the mirror. Morning, Mama answered. What would the birthday girl like for breakfast? Something that'll stick to my ribs. I got chores to do. After breakfast, I hosed fresh water into Ginger's trough and moseyed off to muck the stalls in the barn. Outside, I scattered seeds for the free-range chickadees. Mama called out, "Need a little help?" "No," I said. "What I really need is a horse."
So that gave you your plot, it sounds like. And built up your story because she wants a horse.
She wants a horse, yes.
One of the things I really love about hearing you read this aloud is all those phrases like muck the stalls and the free-range chickadees. You really had a certain milieu you were setting this picture book in. And do you feel like the setting and that kind of cowgirl character contributed to the success?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard for me to... It's hard for me to think about what contributed to the success.
It has a real rollicking quality. I can see when parents read it once. It's not one of those books where you think, oh, no, do I have to read this again?
Well, I hope not. You know, it's funny you mentioned the setting because it's really set in two different places. It's the real physical setting is just this kind of run-of-the-mill home. Maybe suburban home, I don't know, where Nellie Sue lives. But the other very real setting here is right within her imagination. And that's where the cowgirl component really comes in. And it was fun for me because I am not a real cowgirl. But I do remember braids and cowgirl hats and cowgirl boots and listening to my dad's country music on his 8 tracks and, you know, riding horses and pretending and imagining and wanting to be. And so it was fun to go back to that little girl and to imagine and to, you know, to think about, we have some family down south and to think about different dialects, and that was a lot of fun.
Well, you seem to do a great job capturing a dialect that's a lot different than your actual day-to-day voice. Is there anything that you can tell aspiring writers about how to find a voice? Different, and do you feel you have different voices for different projects?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, right now, 3 of the 4 books that we're talking about that are under contract are Nellie Sue books, and so certainly I've had a lot of time to practice that voice and have a lot of fun with it. But Jammy Dance, which really is more of a poem or a song.
Why don't you tell us a little about Jammy Dance and how it originated?
Okay. Jammy Dance, which comes out with FSG in January of 2012, is a poem that I wrote when my oldest two were both toddlers. They were 22 months apart, and I think when they were maybe 3 years old and 1 or 2 years old, bedtime bath time was insane at our house. These naked, slippery children would get out of the baths, and it was all my husband and I could do to get them lotioned up and tangles combed out of their hair and dressed and sort of wrestled into bed. And the kids would run around trying to escape us, and they would go, "It's the Didi Dance, the Didi Dance, the Didi Dance." And the original title was Didi Dance because it wasn't even really a title. It was just a song that I wrote for the kids, a poem, but my sister put it to music.
So this part of your nighttime ritual then, that you would sing them this song?
Parts of it, yes. We would kind of sing it, but anyway, they would definitely sort of jump and shout, "It's the Didi Dance," and would run around, and we'd say, "Okay, hold still, there's one more tangle, you know, and hold still, a little lotion here, and oh, I'm gonna zip, I don't want to get anything caught, hold still, and then by the time they were on our laps for stories, you know, they were settling down, and by the time they were tucked into bed for prayers and kisses, you know, their eyelids were heavy, and sleep would come quickly, and it just that period of bath time, bedtime, it was a dance in our house. It still is, I guess, for the little ones that are there, And now that this story has come to life with Tracy Dockray's wonderful illustrations, and the kids have enjoyed following these journeys as well, the Jammy Dance is still very real at our house.
And how did it go from being this sort of prose, I guess it's actually a rhymed poem. So you wrote this poem, and I understand that you had tucked that in like a scrapbook or something like that?
Yes.
And then your sister made music
for it. She did put music to it, just for our family.
Right. And so how did you go from that very personal bit of like recording family ritual and tradition to selling it to Farrar, Straus, and Giroux?
Well, this again backtracks. So early on when I went to the Des Moines Area Writers Group to the dog meeting at the Urbandale Public Library, I think this was the first manuscript that I shared. And it was well received, even though it was something personal and more of a poem than a story. There were writers there who said, keep working on this. There were a few places that the meter was off, maybe a couple of words that that people stumbled over, but they said, keep working on this. And I also took this manuscript to the first conference I attended, and I had a critique with Iowa author Mary Beth Boltz, who has written many books.
Some lovely
books. Those Shoes is one of my personal favorites, and I also love her book Before You Were Mine, about the rescue dog that a family adopts. But she has many lovely books, and she was a lovely person to meet, and she also saw potential in what was called Didy Dance at the time, and gave the manuscript a very close read, paying attention to word choice and meter. Everything is so important in poetry.
Had you studied poetry as part of your English literature and master's and undergraduate work?
Well, I mean, like any English major, yes, but not necessarily to become a poet. I've just always loved to play with words. I can't draw a stick person, but I like to think that maybe I can paint in a different way.
So you had some critique by Mary Beth Boltz, another fabulous Iowa author, and she has done quite a lot of picture books, so that was great criticism to get, but then you had to take whatever it was she told you and do a revision, and that sounds like that came before Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse, right?
I worked on it a little bit, but then I always have several projects on the table. Even now, I do have several projects on my desktop at once, and I like working that way because as a mother of four, with some of the adjunct things that I do and the volunteering that I do as well, I never know exactly when I'll have time to write, and I like to just have several projects in the works, and I can sort of see if I'm blocked in one area, if I feel like I have writer's block in one place, I can turn to another project.
So you would work on, say, two different picture books, like Jammy Dance.
Oh, and even more.
Bicycle
yes.
Girl.
Yep. And so I was probably still revising Jammy Dance when I wrote Bicycle Cowgirl, and when that got a nibble that turned into a bite, it sort of became the focus of my attention. I did have to do more revising of that too. That's another
editor.
Story. Yes. So Jammy Dance got sort of filed away.
Because you wrote the first Cowgirl and then two sequels. Right?
Yes. I did kind of jump back and forth. It's hard to get a pure chronological order here, I guess.
Well, you know, it's very interesting to hear what your working process is like, because you're telling us you're doing volunteer work. You have four children, one of which you tell us a little about this new addition to your family.
Joshua joined our family in July this year. In fact, the whole family went over to China to bring him home. He's 3 years old. He is hearing impaired, and and he's a joy. I wish I had him here with
me
today. Have you met him?
No,
you haven't. It would take you 10 seconds to fall in love, I think.
Well, I could just see the way that your eyes are sparkling when you talk about him. I wish listeners could see that. But for writers, the point is, you're a really busy person. You've got 4 children. One is new to the family, and he has some special needs that you have to address, and you're doing volunteer work. How is it that you're finding time to do writing?
Well, sometimes I don't find time. When I do find time, my house is usually a mess, and the kids have to find their socks out of the, you know, laundry, out of the clean laundry bin. They've not made it folded into the drawers. Joy and chaos are the words I sort of use to describe our lives right now, because certainly all 4 children bring a lot of joy to our lives. Joshua has been a wonderful addition to our family. It is thrilling. Our entire family is learning American Sign Language with him, and it's thrilling to, and yet he also does have some hearing with hearing aids.
Now that he has good hearing aids.
Didn't have before.
Right.
And it's just exciting to see how he takes in his world. He loves music. He loves it when we turn music on. And if I turn music on and he's facing the other way, he might tell the kids with his signs, "Oh, hey, music's on. I hear music. Listen to that. I hear music." But then even though he hears it, he will want to go over to the stereo and also feel it. And he'll put his hands around the speakers and he'll feel
the
music. And so it's been really beautiful, I guess, to just watch the way this little guy takes in his world through all of his senses. And I think he's teaching all of us to use the rest of our senses better than we did before.
Interesting. And you've had a little sadness this year too, haven't you?
Oh, a lot of joy and a lot of sadness. My father passed away in April. As you know, and he was a young, vibrant man, 62 years old, an amazing dad, an amazing grandpa, the kind who coached Little League and built bookshelves and played golf and carried kids on his shoulders.
And danced little girls on his feet.
And danced little girls on his feet. And when he was given a diagnosis of stage 4 glioblastoma, brain tumor, we were devastated. And it was a journey from October to April where we watched him decline.
Was he aware of your book coming out?
You know, he was. He was. He was able to see it. In fact, authors receive advanced copies of books, and my box of Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse came on my father's 62nd birthday. The box arrived on February 3rd. I wasn't expecting it. I was on my way to hospice, and there it was on the doorstep. And so he received the very first book. I wrote a note to him, and although he had aphasia and could not express himself, his emotional responses and what verbal responses he could give us showed us that he was able to understand what we said. And when I showed him the book and read him what I had written to him, you know, he cried and smiled, and it was a very, very tender and special moment. I should also mention that the sequel, Every Cowgirl Needs Dancing Boots, is dedicated to my dad. And
is that because he let you stand your feet on his feet while...
Exactly. He was the kind of dad who would stand me on his feet, and we would, you know, dance around the kitchen floor. And there is a scene in Every Cowgirl Needs Dancing Boots where Nellie Sue's just not sure if her little party is going to come together the way she wants, but her dad steps out and he says, you know, "Do I get the first dance?" I can't remember how he says it, but that scene reminded me of my dad. And that's so it's dedicated to Dad, who had the first dance. And I was also able to tell him that before he passed away. And so, yeah.
Well, I think it's wonderful that he was able to see your success. And I think from reading some of the things that you have on your blog and your website and having gotten to know you, that some of this vibrant joie de vivre that you carry not only through your life and share with your children and your husband, but also with your readers, all that excitement in language that you're conveying to readers is partly because of the parenting that you had. And I'm sorry that you lost your dad, but I'm glad that he was able to see your writing success.
Thank you.
So, but you do have a very busy schedule, and you are somehow managing to get your writing done. So sometimes writers get the advice that they have to write so many hours a day, or it sounds like you're writing catch as catch can. And I think that in itself is sort of inspiring, that people can know you don't have to have a real set schedule. But sometimes when people don't have a set schedule, they just don't write at all. So what is it that keeps you going back to your desk?
Deadlines. If something's due, I do find a way to get it done. I also have so many wonderful people, you know, in my life. I mentioned dog. I'm in a writer's group. We call it our magical writer's group.
It is magical. I know some of the other people in your writer's group.
It is magical. These people are all mentors to me for sure.
Cheryl, had you ever been in a writer's group before this one?
No. This is all brand new to me.
Yeah, that's pretty lucky.
You were
just going to mention some of the people in your group.
I would love to, because if people are listening and don't know these names and their books, they're just such lovely authors, and they've written such wonderful books. Cheryl Byers Moranville, who has written Over the River, A Higher Geometry, The Purple Ribbon.
Some fabulous books.
The Snows, and she has one coming out called The Hop, which I'm very excited about. Jan Blazinen is also in the group, and she has written Fairest of Them All, is out with MTV Press, and she has another one coming out this spring called Aspen and Laurel. It's hilarious. And then Eileen Vagas, who has written the Mia series, Mia the Meek, Mia the Melodramatic, and Mia the Magnificent.
So you've got some real crackerjacks in your writer's group. This was a real find, and I'm sure they're very happy to have you with them.
Oh, I feel blessed to be in their group, and they are inspiring, and they help me to set goals. My husband also is wonderful, and he will say, go to the conference. He will say, go find time to write.
And he'll stay home and watch the four children for you.
He will, and my mother too. My mother, who, you know, has just lost her husband, and who loves her grandchildren, and she has been coming over on Fridays to give me a pocket of time to write on Fridays. So there's still, though, I have to, a lot of times I've stayed at home, and my mom and I have been talking about, you know, that maybe it's time for me to move away from home during that time.
So you could go to a coffee shop or go to the library or something with your computer. Is that the idea?
That is. There's just so much going on that it is sometimes hard not to turn my attention to the millions of other things that want attention. And I don't mean just the kids, because they're so happy to play with grandma, but, you know, the phone will ring and the postman will come and I will get distracted.
So tell us, too, a little bit about working with your editor. What was that process like for you? So you've had two different editors now,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. And I, well, it's a dream. It's all just a dream. I was a little nervous at first, to be honest, just because, well, the first call that came, should I tell about the call? It's kind of a funny story.
Yes, but let me just, I do a station identification
here. Oh, yes.
You're listening to Writer's Voices on KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And KRUU is the first solar-powered radio station in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. It's an all-volunteer community radio station. And with us today on Writer's Voices is Rebecca Yanni, who has just published her first picture book and has contracts for three others that will be coming out by 2012. So tell us, you're just starting to talk about working with editors.
Yes. Well, so I mentioned earlier in our talk the email that came from Steve Meltzer at Dutton Children's Books saying that he had received Bicycle Cowgirl. He liked it. He wanted to share it with the editorial team. Could he hang on to it a bit longer? I said yes.
And this was 2 weeks after you had sent the manuscript.
This was just a few weeks after I had sent the manuscript, yes. And it would have been after, I believe it was after Thanksgiving, but before before the holidays. And he was asking if he could hang on to it until after the new year, just because those are such busy times. Yeah, busy times and a lot of vacation. And since it was my pattern to wait 6 months for a rejection letter, I said, sure, hang on to it. And then I got busy with Thanksgiving and with Christmas. And it was mid-January when, you know, I always in my mind, I've told this story before, but I always in my mind thought that the call from the New York editor would come on a day when the house looked sort of like a Better Homes and Gardens photo shoot, and when I was looking maybe a little more like Anne Hathaway, because I don't, and everything would be perfect. You know, there'd be a mug of cocoa here and the laptop here, and the call would come, and the editor would say, oh, we'd like to put your book under contract. Well, it was not like that at all. The house was a mess. I was sick. I had like a cold or flu. My son was sick. The house, yeah, was a mess. Breakfast dishes were still on the table after lunch. The phone rang, and I think I thought it was a political call. Caucuses were going on in Iowa, and I answered it, you know, hello. Oh, and we were in the bathroom. I was potty training my two-year-old son, so we were in the bathroom, and the phone rang, and this man said, this is Steve Meltzer from Dutton Children's Books. And I thought, oh, no. And he could hear this little, you know, toddler, bah, 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 in the background. And he actually said, is this a bad time? Shall I call back later? And do you know that after hello, the first thing I said to the New York editor who called was, yes, I just put my two-year-old on the potty. Could I call you back? Or could you call me back later? And he said, absolutely. And I hung up the phone and I thought, what did I just do? You know, I took some deep breaths and we finished up in the bathroom and I put Jacob down for his, oh, I'm never supposed to use Jacob's name when I tell that story because he gets embarrassed. So, shh. But I put him down for his nap.
He was much younger then.
He was much younger then. And he's a big five-year-old now. Put him down for his nap, and then I waited for the phone to ring. Or no, I think I called him back. I think he left his number, and I called him back. And he was not calling to say, you know, let's put this under contract. He was actually calling to say, we like this a lot, but we're wondering if you'd be willing to revise it not under contract first for us to reconsider. For a contract. And that month of revision was probably one of the most stressful writing months for me because I felt so close to a contract. This was the first one, and I felt so close, but I felt so far because he could still, or the team could still read my revision and say, no, you know, this just isn't working.
And then, and that would be it.
And that would be it.
They wouldn't have paid you anything for the work you did.
No.
But did they give you some direction?
Yes.
Did you get like a letter?
We discussed revision over the phone, and I took notes, and then I did send an email back just to sort of sum it up and see if I had heard correctly. Right. And ultimately, I think the team and the art director, because this was a picture book, they were concerned about illustration potential. So much of the original story centered just on Nellie Sue and her horse or her bike.
And so the book we're talking about is Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse, that came out in February of 2010 from Dutton.
Yes, about bicycle cowgirl Nellie Sue. And so much of the story centered on this girl and her bike. They wanted to see her cowgirl world developed more fully for illustration potential. And they gave this great tip for any other picture book writers. I've used this ever since. And that is to go ahead and create a book, a dummy, I think it's called. But to go ahead and to actually start on page 5, which is where picture book stories start, and they run to page 32 traditionally. So to lay out the text in such a way that you can sort of imagine where the page turns would be, where the pictures would fall. And that's never how I send in the manuscript. I always just send it in, you know, double spaced on pages. But at least when I'm working on it, when I'm revising it, it helps me so much to think about it in that way, because I can see where I've gotten wordy, which you can hear, I get wordy, and where I need to cut. And it also helps me to think about page turn potential and the element of surprise and pacing and illustrations. It's a really fantastic way to work on picture books.
Now, some people may not be aware that most picture book authors are not doing the pictures.
Right. You wouldn't want me to do the pictures.
You had nothing to do with creating the pictures, but you did have to create a text that would be amenable to a lot of interesting pictures being made for it. There was another aspect of writing that we haven't talked about yet, and that is the marketing. So your first book is out. You have 3 more that are going to be coming out pretty soon. And now you have not only the demands of your family, your volunteer work, you're writing the books, but now you also have to spend some time doing things like this, like doing interviews. And how much, what's that process been like for you? What have you done to market your book?
The process for me has probably been a little bit disorganized. I'm thankful to have friends like you who who extend the invitation, and I have some blogging friends who have done some blog interviews. And I have done a few school visits. With 4 children, there are a lot right within our community, a lot of opportunities for school visits. I think my 10-year-old son's fear is that I will follow him into high school his senior year, and I'll be carrying a pink children's book and saying, "Can I read this to your class, son?" I have done a few things, library visits.
And how about social media? Have you spent much time creating a website?
I have to give thanks to my brother-in-law for the website. We do have a website up. I feel like I should probably pay more attention to it than I do, but
it is beautifully done. I visited your website.
Thank you very much. And I'll give credit to my brother-in-law, Greg Crown of Slash Web Studios. He did excellent work. And we did also create a Facebook page for the book, For Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse. And actually, sometime soon, on both the website and on that Facebook page, we'll be revealing the cover for the sequel to Every Cowgirl.
And tell us the title of the sequel
again. Every Cowgirl Needs Dancing Boots.
Dancing Boots. Are you doing some research?
Just or a little line dancing.
Have you actually started? Last time I talked to you, you had been contemplating it, but you didn't seem very...
In the kitchen.
Yeah, in the kitchen. Okay, that's a beginning.
No.
But do speak a little bit more about the pressures on an author, not only to find the time to write, but, you know, a lot of authors now feel like they have to use Twitter. It seems to me that might be a little disjointing if you're trying to write and also feel like you have to constantly be available for texting.
Yeah, I feel like I have more questions than answers in this area because it's a lot to juggle. I feel like the balls drop.
Which balls are the most important ones to keep in the air, do you think?
Well, the children. But I do find that when I can be very disciplined, that routines help. If I can set aside, a time, if I know that there are maybe two times a day that I'll be responding to emails or updating Facebook or doing that, well, and I do need to update the Every Cowgirl Facebook page. But if I can set aside time, then I find it's less distracting. I can work on whatever it is I'm doing during the day, whatever kids' activities or volunteering. I can not worry about the email or the Facebook or the blog or any of that. And then I know, okay, after the kids are in bed, I'll spend time doing that. That helps me.
Seems to me like another thing that really helps is that some of your girlfriends are your critique group, so you're having your girl time and also writing. Do you have any last words? I think we've come to about the end of our time here on Writers' Voices. Any last words of advice for writers?
I will just be echoing other writers, but write, read. I think reading makes better writers, and I read everything from very young picture books to adult novels, everything from classics to bestseller lists, and find a network, SCBWI, run and join it fast if you're interested in writing or illustrating for children's books, and find a close-knit writers group too that you can join.
Well, thank you for making the trip from Des Moines to Fairfield, Rebecca Yanni, and we'll look forward to reading Every Cowgirl Needs a Horse.
Thank you so much.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.